everyone, and welcome back to In My Heart, a podcast truly about all the things in my heart and finding our freedoms. I'm your host, Heather Thompson. My next guest, Eduardo Garcia, is an American celebrity chef and the co-founder of Montana Mex. He's known to the world as the Bionic Chef because he cooks with a prosthetic left arm. We're going to talk about that journey, his business, Montana Mex, and his love for helping people learn about good food and enjoying the unity of sharing a meal. Eduardo Garcia, welcome, my friend. As always, you are in my heart.
Heather, I know it, and I appreciate it. I'm so grateful for this opportunity, and hello to everyone else who's tuning in. What a treat it is to be heard and in your heart.
So let's start with your early life, okay? So, you know, born, you know, to a Mexican chef and fisherman. Your dad was, you followed in his footsteps a little bit, right, in the cooking world. And your mom was a teacher, a school teacher, and also an astrologer, right? You know, tell me a little bit about your early life in Bozeman, Montana, and how it all began for you.
I was actually born in Van Nuys, California, 1981. And the spiritual community that my mother raised us in started a migration from Southern California to Montana, purchased 10,000 acres right on the border of Yellowstone National Park. Yet, I feel like the way I remember my life is that I have a memory of those first 6 years, and it's hot sidewalks in the summer, a pool in the backyard, an apricot tree above my sand pit. I still love apricots. And the beach, but that's the Knott's Berry Farm, maybe. Yeah, that's my California Oshkosh Bagosh overalls. Like, that's my memory of life pre-Montana. And so really 1986, the community buys land and everyone starts moving with the spiritual center to Montana when the new property. And my mom loads up the Toyota Corolla, throws the three kids in it. And we drive north. And I should say, just to preface too, that my father left to return to Mexico when we were 3 months old. And so, you know, that journey that our family took was, you know, a single parent journey. It was my mom driving, probably big sister up front, all of our gear. And all I remember about it was I rode in the back. It was a hatchback white Corolla. And I was on top of our luggage, like body surfing in the back the whole way up. And, you know, so I would say, I always tell people, Heather, that I was born in California and I feel like I am Montana made.
So you get to Bozeman and, you know, listen, you just know right away, you start your life and something we share in common, and that's our love of the outdoors. So, you know, did your dad get you into hunting? You know, you're an avid outdoorsman and hunter, and, you know, you enjoy hiking, and obviously you brought some California back with you because you weren't doing much surfing in Bozeman, but skateboarding and all that kind of stuff. So you tell me a little bit about your love for the outdoors, because it really is a pinnacle of who you are.
I'd like to think that there's some kind of mojo that was passed on to me through both parents, just by simply, I am from them. You know, I am of their beings, right? I am this complex parts of, you know, a Jewish American mother and a Caribbean island fisherman father, right? And they mix. I always tell everybody we're matzo burritos, you know, we're just this mix, right?
I love it.
And yet the outdoors, although my father spent his entire life connected to nature in a way that was probably way much deeper than mine, even naturally, in Montana as a young child, where there was maybe no movie theater within walking distance or biking distance, you know, it was 40 miles away. And yet Campfire and Stars Above was its own form of a light show, its own form of an amusement park, maybe the creek and a little bit of a muddy bank that goes down to the creek. And we would bring water up there and make it slick. And now we had a water slide. And so the love of the outdoors was a natural byproduct, I think, of simply growing up with a neighborhood of wild plants and animals, right? Versus man-made buildings and communities. I mean, we had where we lived, but outside of those few homes was the Gallatin National Forest, the Absaroka Beartooth National Forest, Yellowstone Park. And that's what we came to play in. And then naturally, therefore, the environment dictates the culture. And so Boy Scouts was a great babysitting mechanism for my mom, I think. It was a great daycare program. And then, of course, it taught us being my friends and my twin brother, and that it was also a Boy Scout, great life skills.
Yeah.
And then you grow up and you realize that you're still this outdoorsman, you've stuck with what you love, and I'm grateful to now recognize that it is simply a part of my fabric professionally, personally, socially, environmentally. I try to live as connected to nature as possible because of how much I do love it.
We are connected to nature, and you said it yourself, like it was part of your existence growing up in Montana, and it therefore became a part of you. And until you left it and it removed, then you realize how much you miss it. You realize how much it is a part of you. So when did you realize you wanted to be a chef? I know you were offered your first chefing job in college, and we'll talk about your experience on yachts and things like that. But when did you know that you wanted to be a chef?
I don't know if I ever wanted to be a chef.
Oh.
Actually, I think I love these conversations because they invite exploration into subject matter that we think we have dialed, but we change every day and our perspective changes and experiences sort of inspire us to maybe question, is that how it was? Or to share my journey with food, I guess. It starts really young. It starts being 11, 9, and kind of being left to our own devices. There were a lot of homes where parents were working and kids had all this room to run outside, and then you get hungry. And so, you roast a trout over a fire because you went fishing and you're 9, or you want French fries, but no parent is going to take you all the way over to the Burger Shack, like across the valley. I mean, it's not across town. It's not a block away. It's 15 miles across the valley to get to the nearest place where you can actually order a burger and fries. And so then one day you find yourself cutting potatoes, and you have a skillet on the stove and there's oil in the cabinet. We weren't looking at what kind of oil. We didn't know temperatures. I mean, right. And so that's how I found food, was just being hungry and recognizing 1 + 1 = 2. I cooked all the way through my high school years, and my senior year, I found myself really making a decision, which was I was a total outdoor junkie. I would rock climb, fly fish, hike, bike. It was me and a pair of Birkenstocks gone, just out. If I wasn't working and I wasn't at home sleeping, I was out. On the one hand, I could go play. And on the other hand, I could stay purpose driven and continue to stay in this food industry. And I knew about cooking school. I knew I could go get a degree. And so I just, all right, let's go to cooking school. Let's do that. And, it was really through graduating cooking school and then starting my career as a yacht chef and traveling the world. That's where I fell in love with food.
Incredible. And such self-awareness to know your journey and know that you had to police yourself, so to speak. Because when you did that, you opened a whole new life for yourself that you didn't even know at that moment what it was going to be. I mean, forget about being an outdoorsman. You became world traveled, yachting. You went around the world. You learned about different ethnic cuisines from the yachting experience. And please don't let me rush you through it. I know that you worked for a decade on various private yachts. So if you want to share something about that experience.
Yeah. Yachting was, I tried convincing everybody I went to school with that I was in touch with. Even early on, maybe a year into being a yacht chef, I recognized how unique it was. Pinch me unique. I'm getting paid to shop in markets around the world and play, wake up in new ports of call. And one day you're in Turkey and the next day you're in Greece. The next day you're in Italy. And wow. Right.
Wow.
Just drink it in. So I feel very fortunate to have spent my 20s doing that. And yet, like I mentioned, at 25, I had an experience with a crew member whose family member pass away, woke up to the email. Right. I mean, because that's what you had on the yacht at that time. And there's no real recourse for that. You cannot just simply exit. You're in a full-time committed job in the middle of somewhere. And a lot of crew members lived around the world. And so I remember coming to terms with my position in that team of what can I do to help? And it was not dissimilar from how I think as who I am. And yet my focus on the boat, it was a chef, right? It was cooking, production, meals on time, pretty, tasty. And then this moment comes in and it's like, you know, I felt such a loss to know how to support her. And it occurs to me that, well, the time is kicking and crew meals due any minute now. And well, I've worked with Shannon for 2 years. I bet she'd want this meal. So why don't I make something that may bring her joy? And so I make the lunch, but I'm thinking of her, right? I'm thinking of her the whole time. And I kind of witness a little bit of a bump on the radar, up, you know, like, and I think, okay. And I think I just noticed her grief and the indescribable pain she must have been in, simply elevate to just this side of tolerable, right? Like just enough to make it through. Yeah. And others were, so that was the moment where I just thought, wow, food is not just a perfect steak. Food is in fact, this incredibly powerful connection with another person.
So you started Montana Max, and you know, it was exploratory. It was fun. It was simple, you know, always influenced by the local environment, which I'm sure you took from your travels and things like that. And then everything kind of took a turn.
Yeah, no, I remember it crystal clear. I had just wrapped up the decade on the boat. I was taking a day off. I was hunting. You know, when you're hunting, you're very focused on the world around you. And so it's not as if I was, wandering kind of willy-nilly. You know, we live in grizzly bear country. Yeah. There's not to mention there's loose stones and holes. I mean, I go into the wild because it has me on my game and on my point. And that's why I like to be out in nature, is it makes me feel more alive and less dormant. And in seeing that dead bear, I know there's many people wondering, so I'd like to frame this out, but really it was the remains of a baby black bear that had been passed for quite some time. So what I saw was kind of a tussle of fur, some bones, and some small claws, some small little brown claws, coffee and cream colored claws. And I was raised in that natural way as a Boy Scout. And so my mind naturally, I love education. I love learning. I'm insatiably curious. And so when I see that, I think, oh, I'll collect a specimen because this will go into my shelf that anyone from an adult to a young child would have the ability to ask. And we could talk about anything in my home, to teach them, oh, it's petrified wood and this is how it happened. And so that's where I'm going with it. Right. And I go to take a claw, I take a knife out, I put it in my left hand, I lean down. And before I know it, my brain feels like there's a hot air dryer on the back of my neck. And I'm plugged into a sound check at a major stadium concert, frequency going haywire. I mean, that's what it feels like to be electrocuted with 2400 volts.
Wow.
I remember fighting for that. I remember getting to my knees and fighting to get up. And then my next memory is of the sound of my boots walking on a gravel road. And I find myself walking out of the woods, taking a look around, noticing my left arm is black and charred and burnt. I walk downhill to go find help. And I do, I find a gentleman working outside of his home, 3 miles down from where the injury was.
While you were in the hospital dealing with the trauma from this electrocution, this terrible injury, you know, facing loss of your arm, you were also diagnosed with stage 2 cancer, testicular cancer.
There's so many little lessons, and this is what I've found to be the joy and the purpose and power of sharing exactly who you are, exactly how it happened. 2007, I remember being in Saint-Tropez on the yacht, right in like the last act of my yachting career, the last 3 years. And I had a pain in my groin, and not really dissimilar to like other aches and pains, but noticeable enough that, you know, I read Lance Armstrong's book. I kind of am aware testicular cancer is a thing, but at the age of 27, I'd never had any health checks like that. And I just remember there was a doctor on board, actually one of the guests. And I tell the captain, I'm in pain. I got to book a doctor's appointment, and he connects me with the guest. The guest does a quick evaluation on me. And he says, how many hours a day are you working? I don't know, 16 to 18 average, you know, for months in a row. And
yeah,
he's like, you're working too hard. We're going to go out to dinner tonight, put some ice on it. And let's tell the captain to give the crew a night off. And I think I won. I'm like, great.
Right.
I don't want to go to the doctor. I'm a 27-year-old man, you know?
I'll go and for free dinner instead.
Yeah. I was like, yeah, and get the hell off the boat so we can hang out for a second and have a breather. And so then life goes on. But I notice that every 8 months I have a similar sensation in my groin, right? And so then my injury happens, and one of my exit wounds, I had 9 exit wounds around my body, my torso, my scalp, my elbows, my hands, and my groin, right? And like, you can't write a horror story to even include this stuff, you know? And I came out of a surgery where they removed my left testy because it was not savable from the injury. But, you know, the doctors are very pleased they could save the right one and put the purse back together. And, you know, we think you're going to be okay, right? And so the doctors leave the room. My twin brother, you know, I have immediate family with me, and my twin brother tries to console me. And typical macho male or, you know, strong man, I'm like, ah, I make a joke that I hope we can all laugh with. And I know this, you know, we're an open audience here, but I said, that was always the small one. Good riddance, you know?
Right.
I'm like, man, I don't need it.
Right.
And then I follow it up with the reality, which is, you know, that one always gave me trouble anyway. And my brother says, well, what are you talking about? I said, oh, there's this time at Saint-Tropez. And then, you know, I kind of been telling myself I needed to get it looked at, but I never did. He leaves the room. He walks down the hallway. He finds the attending surgeon and says, hey, my brother just told me this story after you gave him the results. Struck me as kind of funny. I wanted to let you know. The alarm bell gets sound. The flag goes up. The team goes back to the results. And now I've been in hospital for 2 weeks. And now they're like, well, what is that mass in his lower left abdomen? Right next to his spine. What's that round gray mass? We thought that was maybe swelling from the original injury, fluids. And all of a sudden they're like, oh shit, he had issues in his testes. There's this mass right above his testes. So they biopsy the testy that was removed. And sure enough, it comes back positive for testicular cancer. Would we have discovered that had it not been for my injury? The truth is that I discovered it in 2007 and was grateful to not deal with it, take an ibuprofen and take the night off. Yeah. It came back again annually for a couple of years. In 2011, when I had my injury, it was on my radar as part of like the aging health list, that the to-do list, right? So I don't beat it up for happening. I'm grateful to have discovered it when we did, how we did.
And you're clear today. And it's definitely a reminder to listen to your bodies, people.
100% echo that.
That is the message in that.
Is there something interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals? BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. And you can start communicating in just under 48 hours. It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help, it's professional therapy done securely and conveniently online. And there's a broad range of expertise available, which may not be available in many local areas. BetterHelp lends their services to clients worldwide. You can log into your account anytime. Send a message to your therapist and expect a timely and thoughtful response in return. Schedule your weekly video or phone sessions when it's convenient for you, and never ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room again. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change therapists if you need to. It's more affordable than offline therapy, and financial aid is still available. BetterHelp wants you to start living your best life today. Visit BetterHelp.com/InMyHeart. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P. And join over 2 million people who have already taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp, they're recruiting additional therapists in all 50 states. Use the special offer for In My Heart listeners and get 10% off your first order at BetterHelp.com/InMyHeart. Get after it. Now back to my show.
Now we are not attacking the cancer anymore. We are now attacking healing from this injury and the fact that you're left with no left arm from the elbow pretty much down, right? Now we have to look at life and what it's going to look like with prosthetics and what the options are. Take me from there.
Well, I have to preface it with my hospital stay of 50 some days was blessed with a couple convenient things, and which I'm very grateful for. One is a world-class support team professionally, yeah. University of Utah. Number two would be a very caring family and group of loved ones that took care of me. I was able to recognize that I had a job to do in the hospital, and my job was to show up positive, show up ready for whatever they needed me to do. You know, I was not going to kvetch and moan. I was going to work as hard as everyone else did, even though I was in bandages. And sometimes I couldn't move my body. Sometimes I was completely bound. And yet with my eyes, I would just simply try to radiate. I'm here. I'm fighting. Thanks for fighting. Thanks for that 15-hour shift you're putting in. And so leaving the hospital was really scary. I felt quite safe there. I felt like that's where I had to be. And so it's almost a mini graduation that had to happen. And then little by little, over the next 2 years, you know, I went through the 3 months of chemotherapy, started getting back into living, working. And so the first 2 years after my injury was definitely a discovery of how to not be so scared to be myself anymore. You know, I was a pretty confident 30-year-old. And so naturally, I think that was probably spearheaded by the physical parts of our lives were the easiest for me. It was easy to figure out how to go hike again, how to go fly fish again, how to camp again, how to be outside, even how to cook was challenging, but I went to those things first.
Yes.
Yeah. And that includes working with prosthetics. That includes, to your question, that includes the new implementation and tools of the trade. And I'd say I took to them immediately and quickly and realized what worked and what didn't work. And probably at year three was when I started to recognize the need to work on the emotional, the psychological parts of recovery, parts of therapy and healing, you know, and they continue to this day.
Eduardo did start a Kickstarter in 2015. So the accident was 2011. And in 2015, because I want you all to go find it and watch it, he did use that Kickstarter to fund a documentary feature film about his experience. And the film is called Charged. Amazon Prime, Hulu, all those, you can find it. Please watch it. It is an incredible story and it will outline a lot more of the journey and struggle. And, you know, although Eduardo was right-handed, he also was fitted with, you know, bionic hands. Touch Bionics is a company, Advanced Arm Dynamics fits them. But you found chefing that you needed not something that was controlled by your forearm muscles and fancy. You really needed basics, and you still to this day use what's a fundamental or simplistic, bionic arm, which is a hook.
Yeah.
So was it hard for you to turn down? Like, talk about that when you have to say, "Hey, this doesn't work for me," or was it empowering?
It was typical of all of life in the sense that we think we need all of this. And I have my hands in front of me and I'm making the signal of big, like all of these things. Right. And so when you're in the ICU and you're Googling how to wakeboard as an amputee, how to floss my teeth as an amputee, and you're just trying to research how in the heck am I gonna do all these things again with one hand? You know, there was some information out there. I remember seeing another chef who's a chef in England who was cooking with a bionic limb, flesh tone. And I remember watching him hold a saute pan with it and just being very wowed, just, oh man, look at him go, you know, like, and so I knew that I personally out of pocket wouldn't cover it. Insurance does not like to cover in the prosthetic world in a way that's really super supportive. So I start working with Advanced Arm Dynamics in Portland, Oregon, and they have offices around the US, but I work with their Portland office and they fit me with a body powered. So what I work on with now is a hook that opens, closes, rubber bands open and close it. And it's a carbon fiber socket which is sort of the shoe, if you will, that goes around my forearm that the hook attaches to. And that's what they fit me with. And it was through chance and luck and fortune and giving of others, I have some outreach happens to me and I get put in touch with a veteran who has a shoebox of hands that he doesn't use, right? Imagine, kind of like a horror story. But he has a shoebox of hands he doesn't use. And he gets in touch with me through the Challenge Athletes Foundation, a nonprofit that supports people with physical disabilities getting back into active lifestyle through sports. And so all of a sudden I end up with my own shoebox of hands and I'm super psyched about it. And it, right around the same time, Good Morning America has picked up my story in the news and they want to have me out to New York to do an in-studio cooking demo as the Bionic Chef, which was the headline of a People magazine that kind of the news ran with in 2013. So there I am. I'm online. You've done television and you know this. The night before, I can't get the thing to charge. It won't charge. I'm in wherever all these studios are in Manhattan because I don't live there, so I don't know. But there's hotels they like to put people, and I'm in my hotel, and it won't charge. And I know it's got 2 bars of 10, thinking, oh, this isn't good. So I end up on live TV. They really want to feature the hand and the technology. Battery dies on live TV. It's live. You know, I'm cooking French toast. And if anyone goes back to wants to YouTube it, you know, Eduardo Garcia, Good Morning America. And you'll notice that my hand, my left hand, my bionic hand at some point towards the back half of the session is frozen in this super weird contorted grip. It's because the battery died. And so now I'm just left with a super macabre like club on my hand. I can't do anything functional with. I just swore it off there. And then I just said, you know what? I never will that happen to me again. And I went from the very expensive electronic prosthetic that did fail me at that time. And it was probably just a fluke. Listen, there's probably plenty of individuals who will listen that find all the benefits that a bionic limb are supposed to give an individual with a disability to have an able, capable life. For me, not only did I have that experience, but the truth is that I work on a farm here in my home in Montana with my wife. I live a very active outdoor existence, and I'm a chef, which involves moving parts, sharp, hot water. And the prosthetic that I had was not waterproof. And so I just said, I need to go back to the basics. I need a 4-wheel drive truck. Okay. If I drive a truck at home, my hand needs to be a 4-wheel drive truck. And so that's why I still work with this prosthetic. I've fixed this on mountains, on ski hills, in kitchens with everything from dental floss to duct tape to super glue. And
it's still kicking. After going through all the things that you went through, your spiritual connection was that much greater. Your connection to self was that much greater. Your connection and love for the outdoors and your connectivity to the earth and the ingredients that you use in the food and the way you touch people through the food, all of that never went away, but came back 10,000 times stronger.
You know what my twin brother would say, Heather? He would say, he said, it's just not fair, man. He wouldn't say fair, but he would say, you know, not only does your hair come back even fuller and darker, but you got a facelift out of the deal because I had a scalp injury, right? So I had plastic surgery, lifted my whole right. forehead. And so we learned early on as a family to celebrate the wins, to celebrate the losses,
yes.
right? Because it's all life, it's all living, and to find humor in all of it. And so really, I'd say that my natural sense of determination and my natural desire to accomplish and to do for better or for worse really propelled me to just hit the ground running as soon as I could, which is no different than how I was born. I think my mom would, if you're listening, I think she would agree that as a young child, I was, you know, I'm not saying I was reading before someone else or walking before, you know, the national average. I'm talking about my mom's memory of me was being all over the show, up on top of things, under things, within things. And so I feel like that natural mover and shaker was probably part of what got me off the forest floor in the first place. It's probably what helped me look at every other part of my life that's been challenging and just say, well, where's the adventure in this challenge? Where's the, you know, we're going to do this. So if we're going to do this, let's make sure to pack the lunch we want. Let's make sure to get after this in the way we want. If we can, sometimes we don't have any choice, but simply to flourish and survive and do our best. But I do recall that it wasn't all chocolate mints and roses. It was,
there was pain.
Yeah, no, I was angry. You know, I've always sort of had a temper, and, you know, coming out of ICU, I was angry. I was upset. I was sad. I was hurt physically in pain every day. And so it wasn't all perfect, you know, and yet my interest to reclaim and rebuild and rediscover and use these challenges. Okay, how am I going to, you know, in a way, you can see it as a gift. You can see it as the worst thing that's ever happened to you.
You're a storyteller. I mean, you have been, and it's, you know, as a public speaker, you know, this is enriches, you know, what you can offer to other people, you know, your own experiences and loving to cook, you know, for people, with people, really, you know, not executive chefing for a private client anymore. But, you know, what I see you do is bring, you know, like, you know, gaggles of people together, connecting them, you know, with your food and inspiring them with your story and your work in the kitchen. You just finished a pilot, and not at some chumpy network either, Chip and Joanna Gaines' network, hello, okay, at Magnolia, you know, getting people to go beyond their comfort levels, right? I mean, that's really what your story and many stories of overcoming are about, you know, being uncomfortable and embracing it.
Embracing and loving really hard on it. It's saying, if I smell it, taste it, feel it, it is, then it is. Therefore, if this is my life, that we can call a mistake, and that we can call an injury and a tragedy, and that we can call an error, but that doesn't mean it doesn't have a naturally born positive value.
Yes.
If we allocate it in the right way, right? And so, you know, a documentary, award-winning documentary film that's now available in 7 different languages in 20 different countries, that wasn't part of my blueprint. But at some point I realized, through the contribution of many different people, many different individuals with care and interest in their own lives as it collaborates with mine, like, hey, this documentary would help a lot of people see a light at the end of the tunnel. You sure you don't want to do this? I was like, I don't want the limelight. I don't want to deal with it. And the truth was, I really wasn't in ownership of the fact that this happened to me. I was just trying to relearn all those physical abilities so that I could just be the fisherman again, and be the cook, and be the friend, and be the, you know, be the business owner. And yet the psychological, emotional changes that I really had to put myself through and embrace brought a sense of ownership to my life that was not present in my first few years. Check out Charged if you can, please, if you're listening and you're interested, because Charged was not supposed to happen, right? I said no to the documentary for 3 years. And finally I realized it was actually my surgeon. That was the surgeon that saved my life, who I feel challenged me. Years after my discharge, he looked at me, lifted my shirt up. He looked at my scars. He wanted to see how I'd healed. He had minutes before he had to get back to his critical, you know, work day. And he just challenged me. He said, it's so good to see you. You need to come around more often. And what I felt and heard was the pain of every loss they've experienced on the table, for everyone they could not save, him and his team. And so then the request to come around more often came from someone that also needed the support. For as much as we turn to our doctors and our medical team and our providers, that same aha moment that I subconsciously had in ICU, where I'm on the team, I got to contribute. He challenged me and changed my perspective and challenged my selfishness of, no, I don't want to go out and be exposed to people and tell my story about all these things, because there's going to be some dirt that comes up and it's going to be messy and not pretty. He kind of challenged me that I could support him and his team by potentially producing something, a story, a book, a documentary that could then be a tool that supports him when all the pumps and all the machines and all the technology is not saving a life, potentially it's because that person's given up. And so given how I came through my injuries, he was saying, hey, you have the opportunity to help everyone in the room right here next to me that I'm going to go work on, not give up, because we lose a lot of people because they give up, right? And so that's the purpose of Charge. That's why it's out there. Right. And so the work with Chip and Joanna Gaines, the work with the Magnolia Network is an opportunity to create a space for you all listening, and even myself, to be privy to more stories like myself with me as a supporting driver. Food is a language that is one of my main connection points with the world at large. It has lifted me up through the ashes, and it has allowed me to enter doors that otherwise would be closed. And so food is a language. And so really, through a shared meal, we get to meet other individuals who have gone through it. And we now get the opportunity through this show concept to share, well, how did they do it? And the goal is just that by shining that light on other individuals, we may gather and accrue enough perspective so that we all have more to believe in ourselves, in others, by just simply having another viewpoint, right? Helping each other out. And that's kind of what the concept is.
One of the things that I want to talk to you about that's important, and we talk about regeneration, and I know how important agriculture is to you, regenerative farming. Now that's something that I've been leaning into, and I just want to talk about it for 1 second, because sustainability has been a buzzword for a really long time. And it's really not the right buzzword, because if we just sustain, we're going to fall off the earth. It's not going to work. Mm-hmm. You know, sustaining where we are right now in terms of, you know, global warming and, you know, our environment and all of these, you know, crucial markers that we're seeing, you know, click off in red. Sustainability isn't enough. We need to regenerate.
You know, I was burning out on cooking professionally, which is why we founded Montana Max. I had this desire to share my joy of cooking with more than just those that were on the boat every day. And so creating a clean label line of organic sauces and seasonings was a natural way to say, hey, I don't want to create a ready-made product, because I want you, the consumer, you know, out there my community to be empowered with cooking. That was a very important thing for me, because I just spent a career just cooking for others. What I found is that I've turned into a small scale, I'm not going to say farmer, but every single day I tend to the 3 acres that I have here in Montana that I live on. And my wife and I have bees and some small birds, chickens and ducks. I made it a lot harder on myself by looking deeper into the food journey. Usually chefs will get a box, and I'm all due respect, I'm largely stereotyping my experience as a chef during my 20s was make the order, it shows up, sweet, start creating. And that was chefing, but you burn out on that. And so growing food has become this whole new challenge and this whole new level of interest by really investing my time and energy into this, starting in 2014, into how to grow food. It's brought me to the health of the soil. It's brought me to what it means to live a regenerative existence. I'm a people person that loves supporting the world around me, all of the world around me, whether it's the plants I get to nurture outside, or a chicken that needs nursing, or a dog that I know wants to go on a walk and, all right, let's go, I got you. And so regenerative farming, regenerative agriculture, there's this really beautiful thing happening, and stay tuned.
It's silly for me to even ask you how you find your freedoms, because I could answer this question 10,000 fold, but just give it to us in a one liner.
My freedom today is found by going to bed surrounded in gratitude for being able to rest my head, close my eyes, and basically let my guard down and disappear into my subconscious dream state, preceded by in the same circle with my approach to the day, which is, here we are. I respect, I love, I'm grateful for all that I am, everything that is around me. And now let's go get the best there is to have to be had today. And when your day ends, whenever it ends, the gratitude for all that occurred, right? The scrapes, the bruises, the breakups, the missed takes, all the stuff, because it contributes to who we are. And to not recognize those moments would be leaving a lot on the table.
Before we go, for those people who don't follow you or don't know where they can find you, tell them where they can find you.
If you want to cook with me, go to MontanaMex.com, and that's where the products that we share with the world live. They're made to inspire you to play and cook with love and really create based on some starting principles and some really tasty products. If you join me on Instagram, just know that if you get anything, it's 100% me, and I manage it myself, and I take a lot of joy in sharing that part of myself with the world. And then Charged Film, chargedfilm.com. You can go to Amazon or Hulu. And I would just say then my ask in that type of a open access, here's where you can find me, is stay in touch, right? Because I'm here for you, Heather, and I'm here for you because I believe in what you do. And you bring this entire community to me today. And so my request is that we all stay connected and we support each other. And we toss this ball back and forth. I do my best to respond to every inquiry I get, and it matters to me. It makes it real. So I look forward to staying in touch with everybody.
Yes, and we surely look forward to staying in touch with you. Thank you so much to my friend and guest, Eduardo Garcia. This is In My Heart. I'm your host, Heather Thompson. Be sure to follow along at I Am Heather T. And don't forget to subscribe and download wherever you get your podcasts. The sun is shining on my face right now after my episode with you. So bright, I can't even see. Thank you, Eduardo Garcia. Mwah! I love you. We'll see you guys on the next episode. Thanks.